Hi guys, it's Ben. Just a couple quick notes before the episode starts. This is the first of what will be a two-part recording with our friend Evan Dixon. This was the first time that Kate and Evan and I got to talk at length in person since working together last year, so we're very excited, and the conversation kind of goes all over the place, which you'll hear, and we wanted to keep as much of it as possible, and it seemed like it was better to do two episodes than one incredibly long one. So when it cuts off sort of abruptly at the end, don't worry, there is more on the way. Also, the music that we've been using was written and recorded by my friend Zach Smola. He gave us that to use, and I hope you've been enjoying it. We're still figuring out, like, is that going to be the theme song? Will we do variations on it, or will we have a sort of rotating different thing? We don't know, but we're still figuring that out, but just wanted to give him credit and thank him for that. And otherwise, here we go. Hope you enjoy it.
We're in cahoots. You really rubbed some like Southern on that.
Cahoots. I mean, so I'm already recording, so we're just kind of, you know.
Is this episode 10?
Shit, I'm not sure, because we had episode 6 went up.
Oh, yeah, episode 6 went up. Yeah,
this will probably be episode 8 then.
Oh, cool. Episode 5 went up on my way to therapy the other day, and it was
cool.
It helped me prepare.
Yeah.
Wait, what was that one?
That was the organist.
That was
the organist. So it helped you prepare. Yeah, yeah.
You guys, well, are we going to do an intro?
Well, here, I'll do an intro thing. So, I mean, as you already, you know what you're listening to because you clicked on it. This is the show. This is Cahoots.
Hello.
Who are you?
I'm Kate.
And I'm Ben, and for the first time ever,
special guest,
I'm Evan Dixon.
This is a significant thing. Welcome, Evan.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome.
Long time fan.
First fan, arguably.
Yeah.
Co-creator, if you really want to.
Well, let's not get fancy with.
Okay. Yeah.
Credits.
We don't need to. We don't owe you money.
I know you have an LLC set up.
Right. In the cat's name.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, hey, you know, it might be called something else if not for me. You never know.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth saying that, like, I mean, I think weirdly, Evan, you and I met on Twitter.
Yeah, I think so. And then we definitely, I think, started talking on Twitter, and then we met at a mutual friend's birthday party in Los Feliz, and then and then we, you know, I've been a big fan of your movies.
Luke and I lost a job to you one time.
That's true.
Yeah, Evan's a writer, by the way. I'm sure everyone's deduced that at this point, but I realize we didn't say that.
I am a writer, yeah. I'm sure I've lost jobs to you.
We can't prove that, though.
I can prove that you lost that one job to me that one time.
It's true.
And then
I'm proud of it.
But then they came back to you for another draft.
That was
burn notice,
which we can't get into.
And you still didn't get the job.
So we lost the job to you, and then lost the job to ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Twice.
Actually, no. We're not gonna like start calling names, but we lost the job to other writers that are cool dudes.
That are awesome. And yeah. By the way, the studio liked my draft. The director fucked it up, and we're not gonna talk about that guy.
Well, we'll see if you want to cut that later.
That's fine.
Ben and Luke primarily write horror, you know, as well as some other things, but that's where they cut their teeth. Evan also.
Yeah, primarily horror. I moved out to LA thinking I was going to be doing a lot of I Heart Huckabees type of movies.
Ooh.
And they don't make those anymore. But I've loved horror my whole life, so it's a good secondary.
Wait, so you didn't initially want to do horror? I didn't know that.
Well, I did. I mean, like, look, my password in kindergarten, like when someone comes to pick you up from school and they're not your parents, they have to know the secret word. And mine was An American Werewolf in London, even though I hadn't seen the movie yet. It just sounded pretty rad. So I've always loved horror and grew up in like Elm Street and Friday 13th, stuff like that. But you know, when I first moved out to LA, that was that first post film school, like I'm going to be fucking you know, we can cuss on Kahoot.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We got the parent.
Yeah. Make sure it's explicit.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be David O. Russell, Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, I was thinner then, so I could kind of pull off that sort of enfant terrible kind of look, you know.
Your hair was longer, I'm guessing.
Oh, well, you know, I've been lots of Evan hairstyles.
Yeah. And Evan had a great, like, so many of us have our Nine Lives story. Mm-hmm. Evan has a whole music career that super radical.
A glam rock odyssey.
Yeah. Did a couple of records. Was a tour manager for some bands that, you know.
He's worked in the two safest industries, music and film.
It's kind of like
surefire employment.
He's gonna start installing screeners on.
Yeah, it's a global and it's a global warming game. Where it's like the first iceberg melted.
Yeah,
and I hopped onto the next one. But I love what I do, I guess.
And it's worth it for the sake of the joke we already made that didn't explain that. We've said it on the previous shows that Kate and I met on a TV show that you created.
Yeah, David Bruckner and I created the show, and we can't talk about the title or anything else like that.
Which is ironic for the nature of this show.
It is, but, you know, there's no official announcement yet. But it's still on the way, folks. It's just gonna take a while to find it.
people are gonna hear about it sooner than
sure.
Later,
I think We're casting.
Do you want to tell your perspective on the story? Because you were instrumental in
on this.
Yeah, you're kind of like the daddy to the princess of. You know, Ben and I, in terms of like you birthed this
well, you met in the
relationship.
Room.
Because you hired us because you said magic word one day.
Oh, Cahoots.
Yeah.
No, I had a scene in a script of mine that's probably dead where
setting the tone of it is like this is in the horror space. So just sort of like being. Talking about darker subject matter. Mm-hmm. That was part of the irony of it. But yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well. I'm not sure what you're.
You were. I mean, in the room, you were describing characters. Because it was like it's a psychological horror.
Sure.
Show.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about things that I'm not going to get specific at all, but like we're talking about things that are like fucked up and dark, and you're like talking about some unnatural thing that, and you said. And this thing
in cahoots.
Yes.
Yeah.
We laughed because I immediately pictured Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen with backpacks, like walking down the street.
Yeah.
And because cahoots is like.
But that's the image I was trying to convey. Was that
he
like
was ahead of us?
Hand in hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So yeah, I mean cahoots. Oh well, I mean, do you have your phone? Because I texted you the thing. There's a definition in there. You can even read it. Like, does anyone have a Southern accent handy? Or?
I mean, I'm from Georgia, so I could do something.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do
it? Let's see. What's the line here? So this is a scene from an I sold it, but it's not getting made.
Well, did you get paid though?
I got paid. Cahoots means. I'm not an actor, guys. Cahoots means like you feel like you're on the same team, like you share something no one else knows. It's like you two against the world. Someone once told me that you could like different music, movies, food, stuff that people think matters but doesn't. If you're on the same team, that takes care of everything, and now that's gone. Well, you guys didn't need to know that much about the fucking thing. But the conversation
starts off. That's the most comprehensive definition of cahoots I've ever heard, and I love it.
Maybe we'll add that to the intro.
So
this was in your vocabulary. You used it in the room. We thought it was funny.
You know, in my therapist introduced it to me.
Really?
And he is, I think, an Oscar nominee. Dennis Palumbo. He only does screenwriters.
Wait.
Yeah.
He
wrote My Favorite Year. He's good.
Yeah,
he's,
I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was on script.
He's your therapist?
He's my therapist. And then I saw him on the Gary Shandling show. Or not the Gary Shandling show. I saw him on the Judd Apatow, Gary Shandling documentary.
Oh, Zen and the Art.
Zen Diaries. Yeah. He's good.
I mean, I'm still therapist? Fucked.
He's my therapist. Yeah.
So you got out of screenwriting and...
Yeah, he does therapy. He literally only does screenwriters, though. I mean, I guess even if anyone wants to pay him, they will. But like his whole practice is screenwriters.
Wow.
Because like you don't have to. explain to like your screen, you're like, look, so then I'm on step two of this thing. And they're like, what's step two? Like you cut out, you actually gain 20 minutes a session by not having to explain to him like what the deal is, like a pitch or a treatment or an option or anything.
You talk yeah. about.
I love it. No, that's kind
that's of. That's the value. Practical. No, it's.
So you when you go to therapy, are you mostly talking about your jobs?
Oh man, he's like it's all the difference between agents and managers and execs. And he's like, his whole saying is that you never know who's ass to kick and who's ass to kiss, you know, and that's figuring that out is the trick.
Well, so like I'm picturing you know, there's the plot in Nightbreed, the Clive Barker movie.
Yeah.
Where, have you ever seen Nightbreed, Kate?
No.
Okay, so there's
it's, hey, yes, I've never seen Nightbreed in its entirety. I rented it when I was a kid, and I put it on with my friends, and then I think we ate too much weed to finish it.
Wow,
so,
former bloody disgusting journalist Evan Dixon has never seen Nightbreed.
No, I've seen it. Like, I've technically seen the whole thing. I just don't remember all of it. Yeah.
Okay, well, so there's Nightbreed is a movie that has way too many ideas. They're turning it into a TV show now, which I don't know if that'll help or not. I never read the novel, but there's like at the
I'll
beginning
do respect
of Nightbreed.
To those working on the show.
Oh, sure. No, yeah. I mean, I'm not doubting them. It's just the nature of development. I look forward to it. But like, there's a plot at the beginning of Nightbreed that should be the plot of the whole movie, but it's David Cronenberg plays, and I think we're almost at the point where we've mentioned David Cronenberg on every episode of Cahoots now in some form or other. He plays a therapist who is like a psychopath, and it's basically like he listens to his patients and then wears this like fucked up mask and goes and kills people in their lives and then makes it to where they think they did it. So they come back to him being like, I don't know, I'm out of control. You're right, I'm crazy. I killed my mom or like whatever. And David Cronenberg, the therapist, is like, you are out of control, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like this.
But you feel better still.
Self-satisfied.
But like the audience is in on it. Like we know
you,
that
you don't
David...
know it at first. And then you see a guy in a mask kill these people. And then you see this guy come home and like, he thinks maybe he's crazy and didn't. He goes to his therapist. And then his therapist like has like, you know, sends him away and has like the mask and all these knives in a case. And but the point is I was imagining as you were talking, a movie about a screenwriter whose therapist is an out of work former screenwriter and is stealing all your ideas and starts writing them into being movies, and you have to like convince everyone that they were actually your ideas, but he's your therapist, so he tells everyone you're crazy and that you made this all up, and that Dennis Palumbo, probably great guy, this is a complete fiction,
but could
be really making bank off this screenwriter's only therapy thing.
Oh yeah,
I'm saying
slander, but
it's not saying, a funny idea for a movie. It could be called Cahoots.
He said maybe. Also, by the way, he said maybe, but also I bet you I could give this to Dennis and he would tweet it out, the link to this.
Please do, Cahoots.
I think we could call it like Chain of Title.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because you know, like, it came from you, yeah. But you know, he's gonna run with it.
Or it's like you're the Evan character in this movie is the one patient who like figures it out or decides to fight back, and it's like by challenging the therapist who's ripping off everyone's ideas, he basically it's like a pyramid scheme.
He
like,
goes crazy though.
But you forget.
The therapist goes crazy.
But his secret
power though is that all screenwriters are out of their fucking mind, right?
Sure.
But he knows all the different ways you're out of your mind. So he knows where you're gonna go in your head when you're thwarted on a creative idea, or if you like the studio's shutting you down, or your managers aren't reading it fast enough, or whatever's happening. He's two steps ahead with everybody because he's seen everybody. Like I'm probably the least. You know, successful client of his. You know what I mean? Like,
does that haunt you?
Huh?
Yeah. Does that bother you, Evan? Do you want to talk about that?
Because I want my therapist to like me. I'm convinced, and she'll never hear this, Sherry. I'm convinced that I'm Sherry's favorite. Nothing will ever convince me that I'm not.
I did stop
but it
seeing.
It would be really fucked up if I knew that all of her other clients were potentially more successful writers.
Oh, I know. I mean, mathematically speaking, you have to be more successful
than
me.
Who's his most successful? Do you know?
I can't talk about that. I mean, he first of all, he hasn't told me because he can't breach
you
that.
Wouldn't
yeah,
do
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
He'd be a terrible therapist.
Yes.
He'd be like, hey, do you want to know who was just in here?
Yeah. No.
You'll never guess.
Actually, I have other friends that I know are in it because they've told me they're in it. And I'm like, hey, like, so I saw that. He's like, I cannot discuss them, Evan. You know that. So he's actually a very professional guy. I had a therapist earlier who was a very attractive woman who I stopped seeing because I was like, wait a minute, I'm trying to impress her. And that's not good therapy.
Oh, yeah.
You're just, you're wired to like, you know, like, you don't want to tell her everything, you know.
I tell Sherry everything. She knows all about everything.
Huh? There you go. Someone's emails. Oh, here you go.
No, it is. Like I went back to therapy.
By the way, I wasn't commenting on Ben's thing for the listeners. I have a new watch and I got an email on it and I was wondering what it was.
His hand's vibrating.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
Oh no, I was just jumping. I was piling on the therapy thing. Please be like, I was a therapist too. Yeah. No.
I'm in therapy.
We're all in therapy. Yeah. That's the fun thing though. Yeah. Everybody is.
But do you kind of want the screenwriter therapist now?
I'm curious.
He takes WJ insurance, so it's good. So you get your money back later.
Okay, yeah, he has to. What if he's like, I take everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, no, give me the full 300 a session. Fuck you.
He's like, are you in arrears? Because we can't do this. Yeah. No, actually, yeah, you get a check later on, like, back. So it's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's how it works for you?
Yeah, you know.
Talk about the intricacies of insurance.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Let's do that for the whole thing. Yeah.
The most interesting podcast.
As if this wasn't Inside Baseball enough. Yeah.
So when your WC, when did that happen? Yeah.
No, but what I was saying was I like the version of, or the, where my brain went with the version of that movie is, yes, he has like this yarn map matrix of all of his clients tying, you know, sort of together and figuring, but then I think it's sort of a American Psycho story for you, just in the sense that you like slowly fall apart and you don't know what's real and what isn't and are you going crazy and all that. That's my version of the screenwriting therapist movie,
which I think is probably the good one. It's a downfall kind of like Sunset Boulevard type story.
Oh my God. That's a terrifying
movie. But I was going to do was that like when you call him out on it, he's like, well, you're the first person to do it. So it becomes like a pyramid scheme. And so he gets you licensed as a therapist and now you get more, now you become the screen. So it's like a whole web of screenwriter therapists.
Well, you actually start making more money as the therapist.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Because you're selling pitches to studios.
Yeah.
Too,
well, that's true.
I mean, it's kind of like the, it's like the, like, was it Ron Bass that had all the assistants and stuff like that? There's
the Bassettes or something.
So it almost becomes like a little, you know, creative farming thing.
No, that would be good. Yeah, chain of title.
Chain of title. It's a great. That's
It's a great name. I mean, that isn't a movie, right? Is there a movie called Chain of Title?
I don't,
because it's such a great.
I don't know if there is.
Yeah,
but
it's a great term.
But you know what? You can't copyright a title.
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. Take it, assholes.
But we assume, and I have not yet asked my lawyer about this, and I feel like I assume anything we say on this is like it's ours, right? What do you think?
Well,
I also haven't asked. I don't think we've talked to our reps about whether or not we're just giving away a million.
Yeah, no, we didn't. We have not. We haven't told any of our reps about this. So sorry.
I'm sure they know now. Some of your guys know.
No, like, we put it up, they're just like, we got other stuff to do.
I mean, I want to have Nate on here.
They're like, I work for a living.
Yeah,
We should get
up at 5:30, Kate.
I don't.
Maybe they could tell us which one we should.
Ben, I wouldn't be so sure that we own everything because. Haven't you ever gone into a pitch onto something and then like, what's the word? Like, you know, you get the well-told thing and then like, you don't get a job, but then like your exact scene is in the trailer of the movie.
Yeah.
I had a gut instinct. Yeah. I pitched on a movie at Paramount last fall and, it was
like, a movie at, you pitched on a movie at Redacted last fall.
I pitched on a movie at Beep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like a creature horror.
One of the top five, though. It's legit. Yeah.
No, but I didn't get the assignment.
Yeah.
But you know, my whole pitch, they were sort of like, oh great, oh cool, yeah, uh huh. And I had one bit that they were just like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I just had that gut feeling.
Oh yeah.
Like they are gonna use that because it is the perfect way to wrap up your second act, and I knew that, and I was like, this is. You know, based on the one sheet they had for the idea. But I was just like, oh man, I'm going to freaking see that in the thing. I know I will.
See, but that's the only.
But yes, like to your point, you can't. Yeah.
You can't.
Well,
yeah.
Well, but that's a different thing. And I think it's probably worth it. And this is where we occasionally drift into like what I hope is helpful shop talk. But it's like that whole thing about like copywriting, like mailing yourself shit or doing WGA registration. I'm not saying don't do those things, but this is to the people listening that potentially aren't like, you know, working in the same way that like we are and stuff, but it's like in general it's cheaper and easier for a studio to buy your original idea than to be sued for it later.
Sure.
That type of...
Or you can sue it. You can sue them for it and then make them buy it and then make it go away.
Yeah. It's just, but just generally, I don't really believe that happens. That, version of creative theft in this, as it, in air quotes, that actually does happen is those things where it's like, you're coming in to pitch, you know, it's like if they're hiring writers for Spider-Man, right?
They steal a set piece.
50 writers for Spider-Man. They're not even stealing it necessarily as much as like, you pitched a really good bit, but everything else you did sucked. So they forgot all the shitty stuff. The exec, her who heard 10 pitches that day, remembers the one good thing they heard, forgot that you told it to them when they hire whoever to write it. And then
they didn't have the idea
after the deal's done and all this stuff. And they're like, what if there was a bit where Spider-Man steals a pizza from a guy with his web things?
Yeah.
And then they're like, and then they forget that that was your idea. They think it was their idea. It ends up in the script because they told the writer and he's like, well, I'm going to make them happy by putting their idea in. That's like a little victory of mine. And then it's like, nobody really, it's like no harm, no foul in that sense.
Well, it's also, you're pitching on such a specific property. And yeah, it's sort of like arguing like, well, like my pitch had Spider-Man in it, you know, like, I mean, of course it will.
Yeah. And you can't control that. So what I'm saying in terms of people stealing these things, it's like, if it's something that like Kate makes up on the spot, that's based on just us shooting the shit here. Like, and then you go just take that and like this is a published record of the fact that it existed here first. And like, I don't know. I just assume we're protected. I don't give a shit.
I think we're probably protected. Listen, if we don't make these movies, someone else should though, because we're going to pick some good shit.
Yeah, we are. And I just have one quick pitch for Chain of Title.
Yeah. I was about to say, do you have anything else?
Well, it's this sort of, Pursuit of Happiness style movie where we're following this one guy around who's looking for the title for this car. And his like brother had it, and he just like goes around LA and it's like he sold it to this guy. So then this guy sold it to that guy and that guy. And I don't know what his sort of, you know, the thematic arc or any of that, but yeah, he's like, he's got to finally like go to his ex-girlfriend and try and like convince her to, you know, talk to her brother-in-law who shot a guy and this, you know, I don't know, like all that kind of stuff. So you're just like following a guy.
Yeah. It's like somebody who has like a bunch of like discreetly separate problems that then has to like do this series of like errands basically and ends up confronting each of his problems or conflicts via each of the steps on the chain of title to the
it's a little bit like, I mean, I just said Pursuit of Happiness, but even like Do the Right Thing, where you're just literally watching somebody like, here's my ex-girlfriend scene, you know, here's my like guy on the block scene, here's my you know, the guy that, you know, washes my car, the guy that like cuts my hair,
and
guess what,
sort of a detective.
They're all part of the chain of title. they're all authors of that day. They're all authors of that experience.
They are. Evan, this is really
back to, really quickly on
that day the boy became a man. The executive you got the job.
Back on the copyright shop talk real quick, I think it all boils down to how much of a pain in the ass you're willing to wager your worth being. Like, if you're going to fucking sue everybody all the time for everything you say in a room, you may not last too long. You know, it's all a calculation.
I literally one time was in a bookstore.
We don't need to even, I mean, you can tell your thing. I didn't need to say my thing. Sorry.
This is relevant to that. Yeah. And I think it is. Like, I was literally in a bookstore one time. And because the office my manager used to work at was in like Sunset Strip area. And so I would go into Book Soup. I used to take the bus to everything. And so I would like get to everything early. And so I would just go kill time in Book Soup before walking down the block to go to the office. And it's like, you know, you're going to go to a meeting or something. So you're like, you know, everyone always tells you, you know, they're like, oh, do you have any books that you think would be good to adapt and stuff? And so it's like, well, you go kill time in a bookstore before you go into a meeting. Sure. Maybe you'll, oh my God, I found this book. And so I was in there and I remember like seeing a bunch of Harlan Ellison novels and I was like, oh, you know, like people say Harlan Ellison's really great. Like, oh, I should read one of these. And I was like, you know, like I was looking for like, not necessarily like I was looking at the sci-fi section, not necessarily for like something to option or anything, but just like, oh, like get some inspiration. And I like picked up a Harlan Ellison book and I was like, he like sues everyone for everything. I was like, I'm not even going to open this. It's like, because if I get inspired by anything in Harlan Ellison, I will be sued.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, that's like, so like, you know, I guess he's did he pass away?
You know, I don't know. Time is a flat circle.
Yeah, no, I can't even remember. But it is just like,
that's the best answer ever to that question.
Like, I want to read him, but I don't want to read him. Yeah, I don't want to read his books while I'm an active, you know, where I could be sued. So one day I hope to, but yeah.
Well, you know.
That kind of was related.
You know what? my response to that is I only hear good things about Harlan Ellis. So,
I've never read.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's got to be awesome.
Yeah, if you've ever had success, you must be awesome.
Well, no, I mean, look, especially that guy, like, you know,
should we try a title?
Sure, let's go for it.
Do you want to do the oxygen one, Kate?
I mean, I have some ideas for it, but if they're, I mean, whatever.
We can do a lot of them. I mean, yeah. I also like the Haunted by Barry, right? Was that the one you were looking
Haunted
at?
Haunted by Brad.
Brad, there you go.
That one, I should like read some of that or something if we're going to do it.
All right.
So maybe if there's something, but I could. That's a different kind of thing that we've not quite done before.
Well, we could also do listen, I have an addendum to episode 5, which is you guys missed the organist who plays an organ made of organs take.
Why don't you go, dig into that a little bit for us, Evan?
Well, you know, I mean, cat gut is, it can stretch across things and create a certain tonality. I imagine that the pedals in the organ could be severed feet, and that the keys on the organ could be, you know, teeth, finger bones, you know, fingers.
Femurs.
All that kind of stuff. I even think that the tubing up to the heavens that comes out of the organ, if that's still what happens,
esophagi,
is that what it is from an organ? No. Oh yeah, but that or intestines. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on the note, you know.
So this would connect to Kate's like serial killer notion, and then but it's like a Hannibal Lecter type thing where he's like sort of creating his masterpiece,
like an
which
Ed
is
Gein
amassing
thing.
Yeah. Bodies yeah. to create an organ.
Yeah.
Made of organs.
Yes.
So that he can play it.
Yes.
As the organist.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a dedicated life.
I love this.
Yeah.
Ed Gein did it. So
What was his thing that he
No, he didn't make an organ.
No, I'm saying he did
not a functioning church organ.
Because he was
let's be honest, this is a tall order.
Ed Gein was a Philistine when it came to this.
Yeah, unimaginative. Yeah, yeah. You know, B-minus Ed Gein.
He did lampshades, I think was
sure,
his big
lampshades,
one, right?
Yeah.
Nipple lampshade?
Oh, yeah, probably.
No, it's like, specifically okay. Someone said there was a nipple on one of the panels of the lampshade.
Wow. Well, you gotta... I mean, you gotta have the thing on the top.
Uh-huh.
Where you rest the prong above the light bulb.
That's right.
And you can't just do that on any bit of skin. Because it'll dry out and poke through.
No, it's true.
The nipple provides extra buffering.
Girth? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Girth?
Just
width. Depth? Yes. Like, yeah. Elasticity.
If you just think of a dead nipple as a really thick pink piece of leather.
yep, there
nipple
we go.
Leather.
There we go.
There we go.
They're like, listen, Evan, it was nice to have you.
No, we are like in my lane right now.
Okay.
Yeah, no, this is...
All right.
I love serial killers. That's my thing. Like when I veer into the horror world, oh. That's
yeah. Well, you know, okay. So I have I had a TV pilot that was all about serial killers, but one of the things that we used in the room was that, the characters recreate the, Ted Bundy, Kai Omega thing. Cause they're like sort of, true crime fans. And I give everything to my mom to proofread because she's semi-retired. She's like, I can send her a script. And an hour later, it's like, okay, so this is the mistake. Da da da. And
does your mom have any free time?
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And but she brought up that her cousin, Margaret Bowman, was murdered by Ted Bundy in the Chi Omega sorority house. Mm-mm. No.
How did this not come up in the 3 weeks we spent... every day together.
I think I brought it up maybe, didn't I? Or something.
Because you had your BTK story.
Wait.
That I don't know if we should tell.
I just have a friend that I knew from college,
mm-hmm.
was from Wichita, and he just knew in the retelling of all the BTK stories, like there was one situation where he locked a boy or maybe a couple kids, but there was a young boy in the bathroom.
Yes, because he would concentrate on the mom and leave the kid alive and then kind of just sort of space out afterwards and maybe leave the kid. Yeah.
So the little boy, so this is like my friend's, and I just remember this was 10 years ago and I remember him telling me this and I already had my serial killer fascination, but it just wasn't as big in pop culture as it is now. So I liked it enough that my 19th birthday, my sister gave me an encyclopedia of serial killers with like all, you know, so I was into it, but, and I knew BTK, but she was like, But he told me the story. I was like, you're kidding me. So he was the boy, like, went to the trial where BT... And apparently...
Sure. Well, that guy just showed up at the trial and was like, listen, I did all this.
Guns blazing. He and was like, so
yeah,
happy.
We watched some of the
he's like trying to he's like almost trying to ingratiate himself by how frank and sort of aw shucks he's being.
Yeah. And that was the... You know, he took a plea, obviously, to like... Because there were four other victims that... They were missing persons that he took responsibility. So, you know, there was some closure.
So he's only found guilty of killing like 9 people.
Yeah, only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently, you know, it was, which I don't know that this part was televised, but that boy who was at that point, like 20, you know, something, maybe like 19, 18, got to, you know, sit on the stand and tell his retelling of being a young boy, like trapped in a bathroom, not knowing what's going on.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And his entire, the really shitty thing with this guy was, or that particular victim, I don't know which one, but apparently like her body was left and their dad came home and basically went bankrupt defending himself because of course he calls 911.
Oh, shit.
And everybody's like, you killed your wife.
And it wasn't until years later that they, oh my God. Yeah, that's really.
And yeah, so it was like, it was just a really all around. Anyway, apparently BTK got tears in his eyes listening to this, you know, boy recount being a little boy. I was like a horrible thing, but.
Nice, tried to. It's a yeah.
Well, I feel so left out. I
I
don't know.
Couple degrees
I have
separation.
My watch is the same.
Oh my
watch
God, that means
that
I'm like
the Zodiac Killer.
4 degrees from BTK.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're however many degrees from?
Gosh, so my mom's cousin. So I never met her because she, died before I was born. But I think she's my mom's like first cousin, but they weren't close or something. So. Yeah, it's funny. My wife and I were watching the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix, and
is it good? I haven't watched it.
It is good. It's I mean, you know, you can have your arguments about the merits of true crime, profiteering, or whatever. But no, I thought it was interesting, and I'd done a ton of research on Ted Bundy for that project, and you know, beyond after the whole thing, and there was stuff I hadn't seen. So, but yeah, the woman looked just like my mom. It was shocking. Like I'd seen her picture before when.
Oh, she's in the documentary.
Yeah, when I was looking her. Oh yeah, because he went into Chi Omega and he attacked 4 women in the space of 15 minutes in the sorority house. He killed 2 of them.
Wait, did you tell me this outside of a bar?
Yeah, probably. I think. What's the? Probably. Yeah.
Never, I don't think I've ever been to a bar.
Yeah. And then he actually, on the way home from Chi Omega, he broke into someone else's house between Chi Omega.
This was the rampage, right?
And, yeah, and this is
that was like the taco truck on the way home after a night out.
Yes,
like, it was horrible.
Yeah,
joke.
That's what all of the criminologists have called that.
Yeah,
the classic. Exactly. Thing that everyone knows.
Yeah, but it was striking to see her picture up there. She looks a little like her. Yeah.
Oof. No. Wait, that's the one. That's the case where they then matched the dental records.
Yes, he bit one of. I don't know if he bit Margaret Bowman or Lisa Levy. I mean, I think he bit both, but I don't know which one the print came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
Wild. We watched that Abducted in Plain Sight. Which,
oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, no spoilers, but like, holy shit.
Yeah, that
just like human psychology manipulation.
Unreal, like. Yeah, so serial killers, I'm left out. You guys have no cool shit. I learned about Ted Bundy when I was like, because you said your sister gave you a book when you were 19. When I was like 13, I was doing a class project on Jeffrey Dahmer for some reason. And one of my teachers gave me like one of those fucked up like Time Life books that was just about serial killers in general because she thought it would like, I don't know, this is a whole long weird story, but I read this whole book all about...
You look like a serial killer, Ben. Here's some...
I was interested in doing... Like, anytime there's a class project I wanted... We had to do a thing about presidents. I did Richard Nixon. And, like, I just wanted to do, like, the villains of everything. Like, we had to do historical figures. I did Benedict Arnold. It was, like, whatever the famous, like, bad guy. I was just curious. And, like I tried to do a book report about O.J. Simpson, but there wasn't a book yet about the murders, so I couldn't do it. But, like, so
I did it. Hadn't come out yet.
No, yeah. I would have loved to do that. But so, like, I was doing anything about Jeffrey Dahmer.
The title of the book is If I Did It. It's just that if is in a different color.
And so, like, we could talk about that for all day. But, like, so, like, I was, like, Jeffrey Dahmer was, like, the most famous serial killer at that time in the, like, early to mid-90s. And I was, like, oh, I'm going to do about that. And she just gave me maybe this will help you. And I read all about Ed Gein and Ted Bundy. And, I mean, I was 13. You don't need to be reading about Ted Bundy's crimes when you're 13.
No.
It's confusing and horrifying.
I wonder how Netflix, I mean, there must be all kinds of, because I think about that too. Like,
how do people
jumping on?
None of us have kids, so like,
Well, so, I mean, the book that, like, those 11th hour sort of recordings where he confessed everything that are in the doc, I actually got a book on those paperback when I was, my dad was living in Aspen. And he moved there, I guess, when I was in the fifth grade or something. And so it's probably pretty early on, because I remember getting all my books confiscated because I kept having nightmares. And but yeah, it was all the stuff printed out. But he had actually escaped from the Aspen jail, I think twice, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he jumped. It's in the doc. It's actually in the movie, apparently, that...
the movie that they did. They just paid $9 million for this movie?
Well, yeah, and they're both the doc and the movie are directed by Joe Berlinger or whatever.
Oh, he did both?
Yeah, yeah, both of them. I didn't know. I mean, I saw his name on the doc, and I saw his name in the movie trailer, and I was confused. I was like, wait, based on the doc maybe or something? But no, he directed both of them.
I'm curious. Yeah. I'll watch that movie.
Yeah. Zac Efron is, you know, committed. I haven't seen it, but I'm just saying.
I kind of like the idea of a director that's like driven mad by one, like, yeah, just all his entire career is Ted Bundy. It's like,
well, I actually kind of want to get back to the idea of Richard Nixon as a serial killer that you kind of touched
on
there.
Yeah, completely. Sort of, yeah. Do you have a pitch for a Richard Nixon serial killer movie?
I mean, it's called Tricky, you know. Yeah. And he's, you kind of flip the whole thing on its ear, right? He's like the world's least charming serial killer. He's sweaty.
Mm-hmm. He's got a weird hairline.
He's very defensive.
Yes.
80 years old.
He doesn't even have the, you know.
He's an ex-president.
He doesn't even
slightly paranoid.
Yeah, he's handicapped because everyone's like, listen, didn't you just leave the White House? He's like, yeah. No, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're
talking. Yeah, he's like driven mad. Okay, so Tricky. Nixon leaves the White House. You open it kind of like 45 frames per second, silhouette view from behind his head as he's boarding Marine One, given the I-1 sign with the hands. You just do this whole thing, directed by Kate Devaney and Pink Collins. Tricky. You know, like, and then you go to the movie, and, you know, you open up, and it's like, look, you're in D.C., you're in a townhouse, you're unpacking. There is no way your life will ever be as electric as it was when you were Richard Nixon in the White House and just being terrible at your job. So what you're going to do is you're going to go out. It's 1970 what? I mean, whatever 70 it is, there were probably a lot of D.C. prostitutes. And you're going to go out and you're going to... God, what was his catchphrase? I don't even know what his catchphrase is.
I'm not a crook.
I'm not a crook. Yeah. So they can't really charge him for not paying him, and then he can be, I'm not a crook. It's got to be, I don't know. God, and like none of the invasion parallels are palatable for this either.
I just like this middle name is Milhouse.
What is he?
Is it Milhouse?
Yeah, that's what my Milhouse is.
Yeah, yeah, that's, well, that is true. Gosh.
What if Richard Nixon was a serial killer and he wore one of those... like caricature
Richard Nixon mask.
That would be pretty okay. So
no one would ever think.
What's the first meta movie, right? So if he had, imagine that, like, he is, what is it, what 70 is it? It's like, it's got to,
I think it's gotta be like 70 to 72.
I think it's 72 somewhere in there.
I know that because my dad was in, he was talking about being in school. It had to be 70, 72.
Yeah. And like, it was definitely, old news enough to make fun of in Point Break.
Yeah.
The wound wouldn't be fresh. Gosh.
Not fresh at all.
Yeah. And then Anthony Hopkins movie was 96.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
74 is when he left office.
Oh, 74. Okay.
Okay. Tricky. I mean, yeah.
I mean, as far as revisionist history,
because they were making masks
about
of him,
people that were secretly serial killers. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, good work.
It's like a Jack the Ripper. It's like Jack the Ripper, but it's Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
Post presidency.
And just, yeah, people just, I think maybe the hook is sort of like, instead of American Psycho, where he looks like every other stockbroker, it's just that nobody wants to fucking think about Richard Nixon at this point. You know,
yeah.
The country is trying to heal. And
is he just killing people because he wants someone to like pay attention to him?
I think it's rage. I think he's, I mean, I'm trying to think of what legitimate avenue Richard Nixon would think, upon embarking on this persecution complex. And I can't think of anything that really sell the audience, but maybe this is one of those, you know, flash over substance movies. And we just have Richard Nixon killing people. Yeah.
I mean, that's like the Pride and Prejudice and Zombies or something. It's just like one of those, like, just mashup things. That's just like, there's not a reason for it really, other than we did it.
I mean, really, if you wanted to be, you know, sharp about the whole thing, you'd switch it to Reagan. And you'd call it Trickle Down, you know?
Yeah, Trickle Down is really, really good.
That's a good time.
Good fucking title.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so
Yeah, okay, go.
Have you guys done this?
No, not at all. But, Ben's like, every episode I bring up my friend Annie, which she's so hilarious. But she's like, she told me one day, she goes, she just looks at me, she's like, I'm going to start a pickle company called Pickle Down. And we're going to sell, jelly beans and pickles.
Sure.
No, but let's do a Reagan movie. We've got Space Force. We've got like Alzheimer's sundowning.
Oh yeah,
fever dream speeches.
Well, you do like Diving Bell and the Butterfly, but it's just Reagan's mind deteriorating. Like that.
That's one version. But he's a serial killer. That's what we're sticking with.
I just thought he'd just be knifing poor people. Yeah.
Yeah. Would it be? Well, we'll trickle down, but he'd have to.
Yeah.
My friend Joe McNeil. And this is, maybe he took this from some pundit or something. I have no idea, but I'm accrediting it to him. He was the person that said to me, trickle down. It's amazing. Like, only Republicans would come up with an economic idea that makes it sound like the rich people are pissing on the poor.
That is true.
They don't even get the joke. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, that's it. Like,
oh,
that's,
man.
So I was trying to think of how trickle down would like a multiple pun way to use that in his kill as a serial killer.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's a poison drip he uses, and he's like, "Listen, you just gotta wait till it trickles down."
It's like the song.
Do you feel that trickle in the back of your throat?
Yeah. Or you can just assume that, he's got to be stabbing a lot of people. There's probably a steady trickle of blood going on from the knife. I don't know.
Like going down. Yeah. You know, I see it going down to the sewer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Drip.
I mean, it's too bad that everything got so much better politically and we can't
we're in a great place. So we can't people won't relate to feeling disenfranchised or, broken.
Yeah, why now? Why make a Reagan serial movie now? I mean,
but this comes out in 2 weeks, so the gulag will still have a fresh coat of paint for us and we'll be all right. Kate's we're not going on
there. I mean, here's the really hilarious, this is the awesomely bad version of this movie that just all takes place at the IRS being we're gonna murder those guys with their taxes. It's kind of the most boring movie ever because it's a bunch of nerds just being gouge them there, gouge them there. That person won't be able to live through this because
it's about slow attrition, you know.
But it's just the worst movie ever.
It's a serial killer movie. It's a slasher movie about
how
economic disenfranchisement kills people eventually.
Let's say
a bunch of nerds high fiving.
Let's say we wanted to make a horror trilogy that had a hilariously ill advised group of antagonists binding it together. You could make another one about them on government shutdown because now they're fucking really mad at the IRS. And now they're not doing it for money. They're trickling down just for the love of it.
Oh,
the
hate
of it. The Purge or something.
Yeah. Well, we can cut that out too. That's all right.
That's all right. Well, fine.